two credit cards maxed out, a personal loan, a loan against my 401k. I was taking every avenue to get funds to gamble. The absolute worst was using drugs and alcohol together with online slots. That had to be some of the worst times in my life, using credit card deposits to play on online slots and digging myself into an incredible mound of debt. I've never felt lower.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Jake, and this one's a little bit different. Jake is just recently trying to stop gambling, and we're going to be having a conversation about his gambling story, but also what he's doing right now to try to leave it behind. Jake, thanks for joining.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time and for offering this perspective, because it's really tough for many, many people, especially right when they're trying to stop doing something, to speak about it and give their perspective. But in talking with you just before this recording, it became apparent that this is one that we need on the channel. So I'm really excited for this one. Why don't we dive into it and tell us how everything got started? When was the first time you can remember gambling?
It started very young. I think my first memory gambling was a Christmas Day get together with my family, and my uncles, grandpa, they would always play cards, and I had become of the age to join in the game, and it kind of took off from there. Maybe 12 years old, and I taught my friends, and next thing you know, we're betting on sports together, making each other lines, over-unders. We didn't waste any time getting into it, and this is 10 years ago.
This is 10 years ago. And so between age like 12 and 18, then it kind of just felt like gambling was like a natural part of life, basically.
It was. Yeah, it's what we did to socialize. It's how we spent our evenings. Even during our baseball season, we would play blackjack at the back of the bus on like the top of a ball bucket, right? But it was fun. It was something you did with your buddies, right? There wasn't any, hey, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
So all this was happening when you were about 18 years old now. Now you're 28. When was the last time that you gambled?
Last weekend.
Last weekend. So about 7 days ago then?
Yep.
7 days ago.
Yeah, about five.
5 days ago. And what motivated you to want to have this conversation, despite the fact that you're kind of like right in the thick of things, trying to leave behind?
Well, luckily, I've definitely gotten past the thick of things. I am on my way out of it. I'm still debating if I can do this responsibly, although there's a voice in my head that tells me I can't, right? So that's part of the motivation of coming on here. But I wanted to share my story because I think what you're doing is so valuable. There needs to be an opposing opinion or just at least additional information to counteract everything that we're seeing on our TVs, on our phones that promotes gambling, treats it as maybe something that is not dangerous. I kind of compare it to how cigarettes were treated in the 50s. But the only difference is that there is so much research on how gambling changes our brains, how it is habit forming, how easily it is to fall victim to the gamble, right? How easily it can take everything from you and you'll happily go back for more. And I've fallen into that cycle more times than I can count. So if I'm able to share my message to somebody who maybe hasn't started yet or is dabbling in it, just so they're aware, just spreading awareness. That's my goal of being on here and to support your message, because I do think it is so valuable.
Thank you. If you in the audience find that this message is valuable, then please smash that subscribe button. It does a ton for the channel and it helps us to reach more people, tell more stories, and hopefully have people avoid going down the same path that we did, Jake. You know, let's get into your story a little bit more now. So you're 18 years old, you're playing games with your friends in school. Everything's more or less basically, I would guess, innocent by this point. When did you really begin to pick up?
When I got into college, I had more free time. Time to myself, right? Downtime, which allowed me more time to gamble. A little bit more of an income. You know, you're away from home. You're not under your parents' roof. So if you spend 48 hours from 11 a.m. on Saturday to 10 p.m. on Sunday watching football, you're not going to get any questions because, again, it's social with your friends. You might be at a bar. It just went along with the culture and the environment I was in. Post-college, I was lucky enough to get a good job. I was making good money, still at home. So I had a lot of expendable income. I took an interest to the craps table. So Saturday mornings, I would take my extra income and I would go play dice. Another thing about me, and I think gamblers in general, is we're competitive people. We like to win. So I kind of took up craps as like a game I wanted to get better at. Can I control these dice? Different strategies, you know, the game within the game. Again, camaraderie around a craps table. You see it in movies. Well, that's the number one thing you'll see in a gambling scene is a movie is people jumping around a craps table. Mm-hmm. I mean, what about that isn't fun, isn't exciting? Yeah. Who isn't looking for that excitement, that inclusion around a table? And that's what drew me in. And I'm sure you've gone into detail of how casinos manipulate your brain to enjoy that sort of thing.
You know, it's interesting that you picked craps and sports. I mean, those were the two things that I think I was most drawn towards. And what you said about like no one questioning a guy in his 20s or even younger watching sports for 48 hours straight, no one does. But now we're at this point, right, where can you watch those games without being tempted to gamble on them? It's really shifting the narrative. At this point, you know, before we get back into your story, do you think you could watch sports for 48 hours without gambling on it?
I wouldn't want to. I have a little bit more of an awareness of how I spend my time. I try to personally develop myself. I just don't want to rot in front of the TV for 48 hours because I think it's a complete waste of time, really. I don't think any of it matters. I don't think that rooting for your city's team is necessarily a bad thing, but caring deeply about the running back's college stats, I don't relate to that at all. I think it's a complete waste of time, and there's a million better things you could do for yourself, for others. You pick it. I don't think football's it.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's like when I was gambling, I knew about every player, every stat, every game, and I thought like I really cared about it too. But mm-hmm. All I cared about was how could I use this game to try to make money.
Yeah.
And so that's the exact same thought. And then with the craps table, you said this feeling of camaraderie, this feeling of competition, it's us against the casino and we're on the same side as a group is kind of what motivated you to keep playing. Were there times at the craps table where you questioned that belief? Because I have some.
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe towards the end. Maybe towards the end where, you know, you get that devil on your shoulder, like, are you going to the casino again? Mm. You really are. And then it became a point where I didn't even know if I was enjoying what I was doing. And that is a whole nether inside battle you have with yourself. Like, I'm doing this. Again, I don't know if I like doing it. I know what the outcome's probably going to be. I've heard you mention you pretty much spend everything you have when you go into a casino. That's where I left off, right? So there were second guesses for sure.
You know the feeling like you're throwing the dice. Everyone around you is betting the pass line. Then you throw seven.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like at the table?
You almost feel bad. You almost feel bad, but then you remind yourself, those are gamblers too. They know it's not personal. It's just part of the game.
Definitely not personal, but it breaks down that belief that we're together. Because as soon as you lose, no one cares about each other anymore. And that
I got one for you. How about this? How about you're rolling the dice mm-hmm. and you see somebody else on the other side of the table on the don't pass line. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? That for me felt a little more personal. I don't know why, but
yeah.
Well, the psychology of it is interesting.
You know, when we're gambling, we like to think that deep down we're going to make the right decision. We know what's best. We're like that guy, right? We know we're the gambler. So this loser on the don't pass, he's betting against us. He doesn't know anything. Meanwhile, all of us are going to lose in the end because
we're
the one making the money.
I know.
But that was a quick aside there. You know, at this point, you're in your early 20s, you're in college. Do you remember a point at which, like, the gambling really kind of reaches an early climax?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can look back at many, many instances. There's one where, again, it's not legal at this point in time. So everything is through a friend of a friend's frat bookie or, you know, offshore accounts where you get a certain amount of credits every week. And I remember blowing through that and, like, texting this guy, like, frantically, like needing to chase losses to get back to zero. And how disgusting is that? You're begging to get back to zero. It's like What if we just didn't get in a hole? But you didn't see it that time. You know, it takes a lot of experience to know where you went wrong and to look back at these things. And
I mean, how many times did you tell yourself something like, once I get back to even, that'll do it. I'll be done. Like, God, just let me win this one and then I'll stop. Like,
many. A lot.
Yeah. And did it ever feel like you had enough of a win that it was actually going to follow through with that? You were actually going to stop?
Yes and no. You know, there is that win that would satisfy you in the short term, but 2 weeks go by, you're still a gambler. You still want to go out and seek that thrill, whatever that is, that hit.
While this is happening, are you working like full time at this point after college?
Oh yeah. Yeah. After college, I was working Monday through Friday. It was a good paying job. Gambling did not really affect my personal life. I think it was because I had been doing it for so long. And one interesting trait about me is I'm able to like accept the consequences of it. Like, you did this, you're going to get yourself out of it. And I was able to stop gambling and stop doing other things just long enough for it to get better, just to start that cycle back over again.
The reason I asked about your job is because I had this kind of strange phenomenon that would happen when I was working full time and still gambling. Mm-hmm. And what it was like, I would earn, and you said you were earning good money, so this is even more important to ask. I would earn what I thought was also good money, but it wouldn't feel like I earned it. It felt expected to me. So I didn't feel emotionally attached to the money I got from work, but any money that I got from gambling, I felt like I earned that. I deserved that. Mm-hmm. I want that. Did you ever feel like you separated them out in your head?
It was always easier for me to spend money gambling than anything else. And I know you've mentioned that in some of your Instagram shorts, like, you know, buying an appetizer versus a $50 blackjack in. It was always easy for me to spend the money gambling. So I don't know if I had a greater connection to the money I actually worked for than the gambling money. I just knew that one was easier to spend than the other.
That makes sense. So at this point then, let's say you're 22, 23 years old, mm-hmm. and you're working full time, gambling away the money on the side, on sports bets, going to the casino. When do things, let's call it a rock bottom. It doesn't really have to be a rock bottom. When do things hit like a crazy point with the gambling?
Sure. And it was a conjunction of a couple different factors. I mentioned that I have 3 years of sobriety in January. Thank you. That's a big part of my story too, because alcohol and drug use went hand in hand with my gambling addiction. This is during the height of COVID, right? So while I was working from home, I was doing other things, let's say. The absolute worst was using drugs and alcohol together with online slots. That had to be some of the worst times in my life, using credit card deposits to play on online slots and digging myself into an incredible mound of debt. I've never felt lower, to be honest with you. It was not a good time in my life.
And at this point, did you view sports betting separately to the other forms of gambling, or was it all lumped together?
Yeah, it was all lumped together. At that point, I would just call it a complete escape from reality. I really didn't care about my well-being, my financial situation, relationships at the time. I'm not the person to miss family events, birthday parties, that sort of thing. Those were starting to slip. That was a big indicator for me. Like, dude, you better get on track before it is way too late. And honestly, it was pretty late at that point.
Were you unhappy at this point? What was driving you to gamble?
What you mentioned earlier was, if I could just get a big enough win to cut these, that's what I was telling myself, of course. If I could cut these losses in half, I think I could stop. That's what I said. But two credit cards maxed out, a personal loan, a loan against my 401k. I mean, I was taking every avenue to get funds to gamble and to keep going with other addictions as well.
Did anyone around you know what was going on?
I don't think so. Not to the extent. I lived with two friends, one I grew up with and one I met in college. We lived together in an apartment in Chicago, and I still had some of that environment. Like, we'll watch a football game. It may have not been sun up to sundown every weekend, but it wasn't uncommon for us to watch four college basketball games, and we would all bet on them, right? Because we all have our legal accounts at this point. What happened at night when they would go to bed and my personal party would begin, the drugs, alcohol, and online slots, I don't think anybody knew about that.
So you were gambling socially with the friends, and were you gambling like more controlled when you were with them? And then when they would go to sleep, you would kind of go off?
I think so. I always had a higher tolerance for risk than anybody else. You know, maybe they would make a $10 parlay. Well, mine would be 50, 75, 100, right? So they always knew that I bet bigger. I don't know what that is about me, but I don't think they knew what exactly was going on behind closed doors.
So at this point, like, what age were you?
25.
Okay, so you're 25. Yeah. You're staring down at a pile of debt as a result of the gambling that you've been doing. Are you able to get out of that debt? And if so, like, what did you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had internalized this. I tried every avenue to get out on my own. Like I mentioned, the 401k loan, the personal loan, to try to pay off those credit cards. But the truth of the matter is I just could not stop. I looked in the mirror, I realized I was completely out of control. And I called my mother and I spilled the beans completely. And I was totally honest with the debt that I was in, everything that was going on. She gave me some great advice, and that's how I was able to get sober and really improve my situation.
You improved your behaviors and you were able to pay down the debts over time?
Correct.
So what sent you back after that to gambling?
Well, I never really stopped. I never stopped completely. I stopped using drugs and alcohol, but I've always enjoyed gambling. There's something about it, right? It's one, it is still a way of entertainment. Two, I think it's something I do to fill my time, my boredom. If you can flip on a Thursday night football game from 7 to 10, you might not be so bored, right? Just the things I talked about, the draw to the casino, the entertainment factor, whatever it is. It's still something I was doing.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. Have you tried out therapy sessions or support groups to stop gambling?
Now that you mention it, there was one time, this is before AA, I think this was maybe sometime, maybe I was 21 or 22. I took a really bad sports betting loss. Like, I was sure that a certain football team was going to win this game, and it didn't happen. and that's when drugs started being incorporated into this, and I had some sense to realize that this could get bad. So I did go to one therapy session, thought that the therapist was full of crap, and I never came back.
Why? Why were they?
I think I had too much guard up. By the time I got to the therapy session, I probably talked myself out of it, right? Like a week had passed. I didn't give it an honest try. And I was nowhere ready to quit anything I was doing, to be honest with you.
So you said, though, that you did start going to AA meetings and they've worked for you and you've gotten yourself to 3 years sober. What's held you from taking the same approach to the gambling? Because there is a group called GA, which takes the same book as AA and basically translates it to just say gambling instead of drinking.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered that approach?
I kind of got a little bit of that. My sponsor in AA was heavily involved in GA for a long time, actually. His story and my story are eerily similar, which is why I picked him as a sponsor. So that year and 2 months that I was in AA, I didn't gamble. But why I went back, couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Couldn't tell you because I thought I could control it probably. It's something mm-hmm. I still like to do. And before we started, you and I talking on the podcast, I mentioned about my family, right? That's a source of camaraderie and coming together for my family. So if we were to like go up to our lake house and someone pulls out a deck of cards, I don't think I could say no to like a $5-$10 game of Texas Hold'em because I still enjoy that. So that's where the dichotomy and the self, where I argue with myself is like, I want to be able to do this. I just don't want to go overboard.
Sure. I understand the feeling. Wanting to stay within control. Wanting to find a way to be able to keep doing the thing that gives you joy without the pain.
Yes, without taking it overboard. But that's not what a compulsive gambler does, right? It just can't.
Unfortunately not.
Can't do it, man.
Let's dig into it a little bit. What was the bet that you placed just a week ago? What was the gamble?
It was on horses.
On horses. Do you like horses?
I do.
You do. So is that something that you would watch without gambling on it?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely. So then what makes you think you like horses?
Well, I like betting on horse racing. I don't like horses. I like betting on horse racing.
But this is an important distinction. You said to me that you like horses, but I asked you if you could like horses without the gambling. You said you don't like horses anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe that fact in itself doesn't cause any existential crisis or existential change. But for me, that was a big deal because I thought I loved tennis and I love playing tennis. Don't get me wrong, but I was watching like Romanian women's tennis at like 5 a.m. I was trying to get a win with it, right? And someone said like, dude, you really love tennis one day. And I was like, yeah, I guess. But then I thought like, would I watch a tennis match without gambling on it? Hell no. Unless maybe it's Djokovic, but like, yeah, hell no.
Special events, maybe.
Exactly. Like the games that are worth watching. Like you were saying, like maybe support your local teams or if it's a big like tournament, championship, something like that. Like Kentucky Derby, maybe. You think you'd watch that without gambling on it?
I think I could, although I don't think I would tune in for a 2-minute race if I didn't have a stake in it. I mean, and I want to talk about the not just what happens when we gamble, but like the action of gambling. Sure. When you go to a racetrack and you are picking a horse and you get a ticket or you're holding the dice in your hand, you're stacking the chips with your hand. I mean, these are the things that you go to do to, that's what you look forward to when you gamble. It's not the actual event itself. It's all the things that tie in and make it an experience. That's what I think I like about it. It's an event. It's something to do. But for me personally, I just can't seem to control it.
What are the other things you like to do besides gambling?
I think my interests are pretty well spread out. I like to spend time outside. I'm avid fisherman. I like to go hunting in November. Really, there's not much I don't like to do.
Do you find that you gamble during times more when it's poor weather?
No. Mm. Maybe slightly more.
I'm trying to grasp at straws here because you're telling me that a lot of the activities you just named are dependent on good weather conditions. And yeah. I'm thinking gambling to fill boredom during the times where there's not another thing to default to makes sense. It's what I would do too.
Yeah, for sure. And that might be the case, but gambling has become so accessible through our phones that it doesn't matter. I mean, if it's July and I'm on a lake, I can still log into FanDuel and you could make a bet when you're water skiing. Like, I mean, it's too easy. And again, that goes to my original reason for wanting to come out here is awareness of how easy it is and how quickly you can fall into a really nasty habit.
Absolutely. So let's switch to solutions focused mindset here. Are you wanting to stop gambling?
Yeah, I do, because I don't think I can reach whatever full potential looks like for me if I'm focused on the wrong things, watching endless hours of sports, which luckily I don't really do anymore, spending money that can be invested, that can be used to, I just bought a condo that can be used for home improvement. That's why I don't want to gamble as much, right?
So to me, it sounds like you have your head on straight and this is like almost like playing with fire. Everything's going pretty well, but you just have this thing that if you put too much time into it, it can destroy everything else. Is that fair?
Totally fair. And it's happened, by the way.
So then we were talking before the call, and the one thing that you told me you had done in the past was self-exclude from the casinos, which for those listening, that's voluntarily banning yourself from play. Has that self-exclusion run out at this point?
No. This point in time right now is the first time where I'm – and by the way, I haven't self-excluded from casinos, just the mobile apps. So I think there's about 7 that are legal in my state. I cannot log into any of them. So this is the first time that I've been completely self-excluded because I was always afraid to do that last one. And that by the way, that kind of goes to show how many times I've gone back and forth on this, right? Eight exclusions from different apps. Well, I downloaded one and then excluded. And then I download another. So I just want to paint a picture of how many times I've gone back and forth with this.
Yeah. I did the same exact thing. I excluded from like FanDuel. Then I would go into DraftKings. I excluded from DraftKings to MGM to Caesar, Bet365. Like it was just a circle. So you've done the self-exclusion piece. The other three steps that I always tell people, finding alternatives for your time, which we touched on earlier, that means something to you, that you can do every day, that you care about, then it's limiting your access to the financial resources that you can use to light your life on fire. And then support group meetings. That second one is the one I'm drawn to because it's the one I emphasize the most. But do you have any close family or friends that you would trust with your finances?
Yeah. There's a few people that stand out. My father, an uncle, grandparents.
Has that ever been something you did in the past? Like had them have oversight over finances at all?
Actually, no. And I've had friends talk to me about how when they were in high school, their parents would monitor their checking account, not for any nefarious reasons. They just wanted to see what their 16-year-old was spending money on. That was so foreign to me. I've always been pretty independent as a child all the way up through adulthood. So that never crossed my mind. Never considered that one time. And actually, I always thought that was strange.
It is definitely strange, and it's not a comfortable situation. It's what I did in my journey was gave control of the finances to my mom. But that kind of brings up another question. It's like when you had that conversation and told your mom what was going on right before you got sober from drugs and alcohol, did you mention what was going on with the gambling too?
I did.
Did she try to provide any solutions for you or work with you in any way?
She did. She actually gave me a gift to help kickstart getting out of debt, which I didn't expect, but that was a huge help. And that action actually gave me something outside of myself to want to improve. Like, wow, my mom just did something amazing for me when maybe she didn't have to. So that's what kickstarted my recovery from drugs and alcohol.
That's amazing for the drugs and alcohol. I will say this. What you just said raised a lot of alarm bells for anyone listening that's in Gamblers Anonymous. And the reason is because there's like 3 rules. And one of the rules is to never bail someone out. Now, what your mom did was awesome with great intention. And my parents did the same exact thing. What happened in my experience was that once I got bailed out, I continued the same behavior and eventually found myself in the same position. I hope that doesn't happen to you, obviously, but it's one thing to be cautious of. It's like, now that the pressure's off, what can we do with that money?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we want is the truth.
Yeah.
So that's the danger of it. But, you know, that's not to put a knock on anyone for trying to do a good thing.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And you're totally right, because I mentioned how many times I've self-excluded since that point. By the way, that was 3 years ago. And I still had gambled. This time, I was able to control something. Take that for what you will, but I didn't ruin my life over it. Obviously, I wish I could have those thousands back.
Sure.
I just didn't. I wasn't putting credit cards in Bovada at 2 a.m.
Yeah. I mean, I have the same thoughts, right? We kind of are faced with a decision there. Do we let it eat at us knowing we can't change it? Or do we kind of like internalize that loss and move on? And what I had to come to terms with was like, all right, the money that you lost gambling, that's what you had to lose to learn that if you keep gambling, you're going to lose more.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel great. Not too lovey-dovey on that, but, you know.
That's where I'm at now.
in your situation, would you ever give it a chance to have someone at least have oversight over your finances?
That would be hard for me because I'm relinquishing some of my financial independence, and that would be hard. I don't know if I could do that at this point. I think I may have been more willing to once upon a time when I was in a more vulnerable state. But since I do feel stable right now, I don't think that's an option for me at the moment.
There's a couple of pseudo options in that same format that could be more appealing. I don't have any kind of affiliation with this group, but there's a group called True Link Financial, and they essentially offer a debit card that you control, but it gives an accountability partner like an alert if like specific things are happening on the card. So in your case, if your triggers send you to go to Coinbase to download or to buy Bitcoin to put onto Bovada, then your accountability partner would get a message, hey, Jake just spent $1,000 on Coinbase. They'd send you text like, yo, you good? Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not full control. It's not full oversight. It's like, are you good, bro? Like that kind of thing. Would that be more comfortable?
I think it would be because that would act also as a deterrence because I don't want to have that conversation, right?
Exactly. That's the whole point. It's not to lose control of your finances. It's to increase visibility on your poor decisions that you know you want to stop making.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea.
Well, I'm going to reach out to them to see if they'll talk to me and get themselves on my channel. But I'll send you a link to them after to check out. But either way, some form of visibility or alert status for those big time triggers could be a big, big help. The next thing that comes to mind is, you're in AA and you're still going to meetings, staying clean?
Still staying clean. I'm not active in AA anymore. Yeah. I left after a little bit over a year.
Have you noticed any changes in your behavior since you left, or it's all still been good?
No, I have zero desire to go back to drugs and alcohol. I don't keep up with the daily readings and the daily prayer that you would experience in an AA group. But luckily I hope to say that I kicked that bug for good. I don't want to go back to that.
Yeah, I understand. And congratulations. The readings can get pretty tedious in GA as well, but
yeah, the
group is what I think is most important. Would you be open to going to one meeting?
I have a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine that is going through it with gambling right now. And, I want him to see this, and I encouraged him to go to meetings because how much AA helped me and helped me change the way I thought. And it really helps you. It helps get you out of that space of your normal thought process. I would go to a meeting online to support him. I don't know why I have reservations about jumping all in to it. Maybe because it was how involved I was in regular AA. I was doing like 3 meetings a week, super involved. I don't know if I want to devote that type of time anymore, especially if I don't know if I'm willing to let it go. That's the scary part, man. I'm just being real with you. It's just that little piece.
Yeah. I appreciate you being real. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
You know, I've always gone to one meeting a week. I never did the 90-90. I never did 3 a week. I never really even read the daily readings, to be honest. For me, it was just about that accountability check again. I got to the point that I was ready to give it up. Not that I didn't still love doing it, right? I still would love to gamble, but I know that every time I gamble, I light my life on fire.
Yeah.
And so I had to make that trade-off. Maybe you're not there yet. Maybe you'll get there soon, but if you could go and give one a try, I'd feel great about it. And maybe you go, that sucked, I'm not ready for that. Or you go, maybe something someone said makes sense and it changes everything. We don't know. Till you give it a shot.
For sure. Do you do in-person meetings? Are you online? What do you like to do?
I have a in-person meeting that I've been to most Tuesdays for the last 3 years. And then I've been to some online meetings. It's not my favorite thing, but for accessibility, it's great. Like if you live in the middle of a cornfield somewhere, like you need to call in, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like the in-person, but when you were going to AA, what did you like?
Yeah, I was also in person. I went with my uncle. He was the one that brought me into their group, and he's the person that my mom told me to call when I had come clean to her. So he kind of took me under his wing and introduced me to a lot of great people. So I was, I just got sucked in. I don't want to say sucked in. I got introduced to their routines. It was three meetings a week. They were pretty hardcore with it, and I became better for it.
Is your uncle a gambler as well?
Yep. Absolutely.
Has he ever gotten involved in GA? Do you know?
I don't think he has. He's a little bit older than me. I think his crazy gambling days ended when he quit drinking. But again, that social aspect, I mentioned our lake house, Texas Hold'em, beanbag tournaments. I don't think we're ready to give it up. I speak for him too. I don't think he would give it up because it's just something that we do.
Yeah. And you know, to a certain extent, like, it's tough for me to just blanket say this, but like, if your gambling is $5 beanbag tournaments with your family, I don't think that that's going to ruin your life. I think what's the bad part is that commercial gambling, the apps, the casinos, the ones where you're betting thousands of dollars, right? If you enter Gamblers Anonymous, I don't think you would have to give up spending $10 with your family. I think it's more about what happens when you go home and you're on your own.
I'm glad you said that because in AA, that's the only experience I have. You know, one beer is no different than a 30 rack. You lose your sobriety date. You tell the group that you relapsed. So I didn't know, and I don't know what GA's perspective is. If to me, that's gambling, right? And unfortunately, I still know that I'm more apt to hit the casino after a little taste of Texas Hold'em and friendly blackjack. That's why it's so dangerous. But you're saying that you don't think that would be a hang up in a GA group? Like,
well, I didn't until that last sentence you just spit out.
I know, and right? It's the truth.
That's when it becomes a problem. But it's about learning your own triggers and knowing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In GA, in recovery, I can't speak for GA, but in recovery, you define what gambling is for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so if doing that isn't going to lead to more problems, then if that's your life, that's your life. But you should be adjusting your life to live the happiest and healthiest one that you can. And knowing what makes you want to gamble more is very important. So
absolutely.
You said that last sentence. I was
well, I get, you know, done it enough.
Well, I don't want to drill into you anymore. You know, after this call, check out everything. If you have any questions about it, please reach out to me. And I want to see you getting help if you're ready to leave it behind. If you're not, then we just planted a seed in this conversation that it is possible when you are ready. Another thing before we wrap up that you had talked about before the call is you told me that we're in the midst of a gambling epidemic. And you think that anyone that's involved with it right now, be the celebrities, the advertisers, the casino executives, in a few years, people are going to look at them and think that was a big mistake. Yeah. Can you elaborate on why you feel that way?
Well, I think it's completely predatory. I think they know exactly what they're doing. And in preparation for this call, I did find I screenshotted something that I wanted to share.
Sure.
In New York last year, there was $20 billion in wagers. $2 billion was won by the sportsbook, and the state of New York made $1 billion in taxes. Mm. I don't know why they're willing to, they know what gambling does to people, to parents, to children, all the negative things that come of this disease that negatively affects society, and they let it happen. They advertise it like it's normal, like it can't harm anybody. It's disgusting to me just from my personal experience and what I've seen it do to people in my life.
It is. And, you know, I think that a lot of times the argument's always right. Like, hey, the amount of money that we're going to make from this can do good things. That's the argument with the taxes, right? But what's never factored in is the social costs that come from gambling addiction. Now, if they make $1 billion last year, we have to think about what is the cost of people getting addicted to gambling in the state of New York. There's a number to be put on that. I didn't prepare ahead of time, so I don't have it. But we're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in damages via court fees, via insurance payments going out because of suicides. Many, many bad things that happen. And we don't talk about it because look how much money we're going to make from the taxes. Is that money worth thousands of lives? Is the question that needs to be asked.
Well, I know the answer, and I don't think that people are prepared to talk about it, but it's real, and I think it's only going to get worse.
I think you can even use that mindset to justify leaving it behind. If you know that the sports books are predatory, if you know the advertisements are against you, if you know that they're trying to suck you back in to take your money, why give it to them?
If you're watching this until this point, there's obviously a reason for that, and it's okay to ask for help. It's not a bad thing. There's really nothing wrong with you that can't be fixed, but you need to ask for help and be ready to accept it.
100%. Well, Jake, thanks for sharing your story. If you're in the audience and you want to hear another story of someone who's struggling with a gambling addiction, then check out this video, and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.